So welcome to the final episode of series 8 of the Lawyers Coach podcast.
Oliver, here we are at the end of another series.
No, it's been absolutely brilliant. We've had such an eclectic range of guests with so many perspectives and experiences. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed getting some non-lawyers to come into the conversation and give their insights. I think we need to do more of that going forward.
I think that's right. Good learning for the future, maybe.
Definitely.
Less lawyers on the Lawyers Coach podcast.
So we're mixing things up. We're having a conversation, which is lovely. And I thought that what might be interesting, because we've kind of dipped our toe in across the series and mentioned our Legal Pulse survey, but we haven't really done a deep dive. So maybe it'll be interesting to have a look and see what we found out and share our reflections.
Yeah, let's do that. And for me, the obvious starting point was how much more confident the senior leaders in the industry are in terms of the growth of the industry, and in particular their own firms. They're more confident with the growth of their firms than they are with the British economy.
Yeah, and also with the growth of the sector itself, which is interesting, isn't it? Reading between the lines, you know, they think that they are going to outperform the sector and certainly the economy itself, which is really interesting. I think the main reflection for me there is, you know, talking to clients as I do on a regular basis, I would agree. I think that there is a real lack of positivity about what the future holds. And really interesting to see that firms perhaps don't share that negativity. And I think that there is a real need for sensitivity to make sure that, you know, firms are where their clients are in terms of fears around pricing, concerns about value, you know, even more than usual.
That's a great point. You know, that disconnect. And you know, there's almost a demonstration that the legal industry itself is resilient and can withstand the cycles of the economy. Question, can their clients? And they need to be, you know, empathetic about that.
Yeah, definitely. And empathy, you know, interesting. Where we started, wasn't it? The Lawyers Coach, our first.
Absolutely.
Our first series was all about empathy. So one of the things we wanted to find out was what key challenges there were for firms. And again, some interesting findings here. So most firms agreeing that lawyer remuneration remains a challenge, or is a challenge, and lawyer recruitment also a really key challenge, sitting alongside lawyer retention, with 58% of our respondents saying that that was a challenge for them. Smaller numbers, interestingly, highlighting firm morale as a challenge, culture, and also implementing DEI. So, you know, what that tells me, or what kind of comes up for me with those statistics, is that, you know, perhaps focusing on morale, focusing on culture is something that firms maybe need to pay more attention to, because I think both of those things have an impact on whether lawyers stay, you know, helps to bring lawyers in, and you know, perhaps reduces the need to pay lawyers more money, because the culture is the thing that will keep them there.
I think that's absolutely right. So let's focus on the cultural aspects of a firm. And if you remember my conversation with Sarah Henwood, the CEO of Thompson, Snell and Passmore, she was all over the culture and the importance of that, and that as a feeder of retention, if you like. So yeah, make sure, I suppose there's something in there about making sure law firms are looking in the right direction, that it's not just about the financial elements of running the business, but also the really key cultural ones.
Yeah, and again, it made me think there about the conversation that I had with Rob around, you know, this problem of sticky offices and how can firms get people back. And again, for him, culture was a massive part of that too.
And there's some interesting comments around development of lawyers as well, Claire, and in particular, that difference between 38% agreeing that the lawyer development in terms of legal skills was a challenge for them. And you know, you contrast that with 61% thinking that, you know, EQ and soft skills, dare I call them soft skills, we can debate that, I suppose, was a challenge too. So in some respects, a bit of a recognition that, or an increasing recognition perhaps, that it's about the rounded people skills that are really important moving forward for the industry.
Yeah, and you know, it's something we talk about a lot, isn't it? And again, thinking back to the start of this series with Lee, and you know, him saying that for him, it will be the human skills, the soft skills that will really be the key differentiator. And I think that's got to be right. I think there's such a lot of noise around lawyers and their lack of training around human skills. The O-shaped lawyer, we've spoken to representatives of the O-shaped lawyer before in previous episodes and series. And I think, you know, there is a recognition client side that they want lawyers who they can do business with, who they can form relationships with, who they can be creative with, who they can be innovative with. And just looking at some of the other numbers that came out in our survey, you know, some people kind of named AI as causing uncertainty, but it wasn't really seen as a top challenge.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because I think, you know, AI is something that's generating such a buzz. But I wonder again whether those human skills play into that, and the ability to be able to use new technology, to take risks. All of this comes back to self-awareness, doesn't it, and human skills.
That's right. And maybe there's something about the only way that we can still be relevant in a world potentially dominated by AI is to be human. And therefore making sure that we firstly remember those skills and remember the importance of them and work on them and develop them. Maybe that's the obvious way to succeed in whatever this new world looks like.
Yeah. And it's throws up for me, where does the intervention, I'm not sure intervention is the right word, maybe it is for some, but where does the intervention come in? You know, does that start with our juniors? Does that start in law school? Should we be introducing modules into law school which start to teach and increase recognition of the importance of human skills? You know, what does that mean if they're not then tracked and rewarded when you go into law firms? So certainly conversations that I have with some of my clients, I'm sure they're conversations you're having with yours, but I think, you know, a huge issue that firms need to start to get a handle on.
Absolutely. And could there be something about that delta between the need for legal training and those human skills that flows into the challenge of getting DEI successfully embedded into a firm? And now I'm thinking to my conversations with Nikki Edwards at Howard Kennedy and your conversation with Lexi at BT. If we don't underscore the need to be human, does that mean those more subtle cultural needs of any organization in terms of DEI, do they get harder to land maybe?
I think so. And I think, you know, it's all of these things tie in together, don't they? As is often the way in systems. I think the fact that firms, you know, see the immediate impact perhaps of culture, that it's hard for us to retain talent. You know, we need to pay our talent more. You know, how can we solve that problem? The fact that that seems to be in focus to a bigger degree than, you know, how do we implement our D&I initiatives? How do we work on improving our culture seems to play second fiddle. And I think, you know, I loved the way that Lexi spoke about the little things. It's, you know, it's about inclusion. It's about making everyone feel welcome, which seems like such a simple thing to do, but seems to be out of the grasp of so many.
But to achieve that, you need to encourage people to be human, to feel a part of it. So, you know, you almost kind of that's you square the circle in that way. In that, you need to, yes, everyone needs to be a great lawyer or business person, whatever their particular sector is. However, they've got to be a human and therefore understand the relevance of DEI or, you know, equity and equality and all the real key things that are becoming so much more important in the current workplace.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, it's interesting in terms of what's showing up. And I tend to see themes when I'm coaching lawyers, and certain themes will come up, you know, across coachees, which is interesting. And at the minute, I'm really seeing stress being something that is showing up more and more. You know, I mean, there are so many statistics, 2/3 of the legal profession have experienced burnout at some point in their careers. You know, some really scary numbers around mental health and well-being. And I wonder whether a lot of this comes back to, you know, the question, do we give our lawyers enough time to be able to be human, or are the pressures such that, you know, that goes out of the window, particularly when they're under constant pressure, constant stress? You know, that is that the first thing to give?
I couldn't help but see that one of the final numbers in our survey around coaching, that 94% of those asked saw the value of coaching. And that gives me great optimism that as a tool, coaching can be a really useful way of supporting many of these areas of challenge that the industry finds.
Yeah, and we don't, you know, often talk about coaching, do we? Maybe it's an opportunity for us to do that.
We should do more, shouldn't we?
Maybe, but yeah. Maybe we should have a bit of a chat around coaching and what it is and why it can help with some of the things that we've been talking about. Because it's really encouraging to see that, you know, almost everyone that answered our survey saw the value in coaching. Sadly, the numbers were slightly low when it came to those who thought that they were likely to commission coaching, albeit more than half of those surveyed were likely to commission some coaching for the year ahead. And a small number also, well, in fact, over half looking to commission team coaching as well, which is fantastic because, again, often we think of coaching as being one-to-one, but, you know, coaching teams is something that both you and I are involved with. And the team as a unit is obviously key to success in professional firms. But,
well, it's so difficult, Claire, isn't it, to coach somebody in isolation without reference to their system. So that's why team coaching work can be so critical and drive great results.
And I wonder, you know, as I said, we don't, you know, sometimes we touch on coaching, but, you know, maybe it's an opportunity for us to talk a little bit about, you know, what is coaching and how can it help law firms solve some of these big challenges. I've obviously got my views, but what do you think? Where do you think coaching has a role to play to tackle some of the challenges that we've seen firms identify?
I think there are really two key ways. I think the first way is when a coach creates that safe space to work with their client, that individual is able to really think through the issues that they might have and really get their head in a place where they can hopefully make progress against whatever that particular challenge or challenge might be. And then secondly, again, facilitated by a coach, I think an individual is enabled to go and try things, stretch themselves, take that homework into the business, try different things, build a bit more confidence through testing and learning ideas that they created in the coaching room. And that combination of the self-reflection, which you mentioned earlier in this conversation, Claire, that self-reflection plus, you know, the generation of ideas to try, massive for me. And that's why I see so much success, is just people pushing themselves iteratively out of their comfort zone and making progress.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, coaching works so well with, I mean, it works so well full stop, but I think it works so well with lawyers in particular, because it starts on the premise that, you know, individuals know the answer to their own problems or challenges. And, you know, and that's true for
Absolutely.
Individuals, it's true for teams, it's true for systems, but, you know, the answer lies with the person who knows the context, knows, you know, where they are and what might work or what might not work.
And the coaching then is the opportunity for them to explore that and almost access the answers that they've already got in that safe space.
Absolutely. And I think providing that challenge, providing that mirror is a really powerful tool for a profession which is, you know, often overworked, often under pressure. I wrote an interesting article the other day about kind of the personality traits of lawyers, and I was a bit reluctant to write it because I don't like to put people into boxes, but lots and lots of studies have shown that lawyers tend to be pessimistic, you know, unsurprisingly, given that they are trained to identify risk. And interestingly, actually, lots of lawyers also tend to sit on the kind of the introverted side of the spectrum. So what that means is they're probably deep thinkers and, you know, perhaps don't necessarily have that time for someone to bounce ideas off as an extrovert. I'm constantly bouncing ideas off people, because that's the way that I process and think. But, you know, particularly for those who are more introverted, providing a space where they can sit with their thoughts and have those challenged, I think is really powerful.
Interesting what you say about the introversion of lawyers potentially, and that contrasts with the expectation of them to be great business developers and to get out there, get amongst it and generate work for their practice. Again, a really great contradiction that maybe one day we should explore.
Definitely. I think, you know, you know that kind of mentioning business development gets me set off, which is why I tend to pass over the interview with Lee. I passed over to you because I knew that if he and I got together, we'd take up several episodes.
You get too excited.
But no, absolutely. And again, a really good example of where coaching can help. So, you know, a frustration for me, and it's something that I've seen again and again when I explored gender in particular, you know, many women fail to put themselves forward for partnership because they believe that, you know, business development actually isn't for them, which for me is really sad because it kind of shows that perhaps an misunderstanding about what business development is. And, you know, it's yet another example of how, you know, we get caught up in traps of our own making. We limit ourselves, and coaching is a great way to start to explore some of those beliefs and to see whether or not they're true.
So dare we? We've got series 9 to create before the summer, Claire. Dare we commit to our listeners that we're going to have a coaching related series 9? And we are the Lawyers Coach podcast, after all, and have a coaching based series. What do you think?
Why not? I think it's about time. And, you know, perhaps we could do some online coaching, some snippets to give people an insight into what that looks like and sounds like, and start to explore some of the themes that commonly come up in coaching.
And in that vein, if you're listening and there's a topic that you would like to see how it might be approached through coaching, just drop us a line, go onto the website, drop us a line at lawyercoach.co.uk, suggest a topic, and we will do our very best to show how coaching can be used in that context.
Fantastic. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Be a little bit more fantastic about that one, Claire.
It was a reflective fantastic. My mind whirring in terms of how and where we can go with it. And I guess the other thing that's kind of distracting me perhaps a little bit is, you know, it would, you know, the close of this series is going to coincide with International Women's Day, and that, you know, there'll be many a podcast, I'm sure, that's going to land with, you know, individuals talking about International Women's Day. And actually, I would highly recommend, if you haven't listened to my interview with Miriam Gonzalez, which coincided with International Women's Day, gosh, a few years ago now, I think, do make sure you have a listen to that episode. It remains one of my favourites and absolutely fascinating.
Oh, it was a great episode, Claire, really inspiring.
Absolutely fascinating conversation. But one of the things that, you know, often comes up for me as someone who does a lot of work around gender and particularly in the context of partnership and how we can make partnership more reflective of the profession as a whole, is this idea of how do we get men involved? And it is perhaps a controversial topic, but, you know, for me, I think that, you know, until all parts of the system come together, you know, this isn't going to be something that's going to be solved. So, Oliver, I'd, you know, be really, really love to hear your perspective. You know, what do you think that firms can be doing this International Women's Day to get their male lawyers more engaged and interested in finding out?
For me, and I wrote about this recently, for me, the missed opportunity is around allyship, is that men need to be better allies with women to help them succeed. Without that, it, you know, creating, you know, an almost them and us approach to trying to solve these inequalities just is, in my view, doomed to fail. And so men need to be eager to get on the inside, need to be accepted on the inside, and really to support women in making their careers what they want them to be.
And do you think there's an element of, and, you know, I feel like I'm picking on you, Oliver, but
you're very welcome.
You're who I've got. So do you think there's an element of fear?
I think there's fear on two levels. I think there's structural fear in the sense of the workplaces have been structured for the benefit of men for so long that being changed philosophically is a challenge. And then I think secondly, and I absolutely suffer from this second one, which is men are terrified of doing and saying the wrong things. And men would rather, there are many men who would rather not get involved because they don't want to risk getting involved and saying the wrong thing. And somehow, and I think allyship is probably part of it, somehow we need to get over that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? That reminds me, I think it was Henley Business School did a study around AI and, you know, what were the things that got in the way of some of the initiatives? And one of the things that came up there was fear of saying the wrong thing. So it's interesting that you mentioned that. And I wonder, you know, what more can we be doing? And, you know, this is a question I'd invite all our listeners, if you're engaged in International Women's Day, you know, what more can we be doing to encourage those conversations and to perhaps reduce that fear level? Because I think for me, you know, whatever the answer is, and I think that there are numerous layers to that, it's of benefit of all of us, you know, men and women. So, you know, both need to shape the future that we want. So it's really important that we think about how can we ensure that everyone is engaged in the conversation and not afraid to say what they think, because those thoughts are in the system, so they need to be surfaced to be dealt with.
Couldn't agree with you more.
So I think that's a lovely place to end. We have had a fantastic series. If you haven't managed to catch all of the episodes, make sure that you do that. My mind is worrying about the theme for next time, which is going to be coaching, probably about time. And I'd echo Oliver's thoughts there that if you have a topic that you would like to see covered from a coaching perspective, get in touch. If you'd like to be coached on one of these episodes, get in touch as well. And Oliver, I'm really looking forward to hitting play and listening to what comes up next time.
As always, Claire, it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to create the podcast with you. I can't wait for series 9.
Lawyers Coach is brought to you by Client Talk and Hansard Coaching. If you're a lawyer and would like to take part in Lawyers Coach, please visit our website lawyercoach.co.uk for further details. And you can also join the conversation on our LinkedIn group Lawyers Coach. If there are any topics you'd like to hear us discuss, then just get in touch.